Hello and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with the headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Qi Zhi. Coming up in this edition, the humanitarian situation in Gaza continues to deteriorate as violence escalates despite the UN ceasefire resolution. Two bodies are being recovered from the site of the bridge collapse in Baltimore as local businesses voice concerns over the economic impact. And Argentinian President Javier Milei has promised to cut tens of thousands of jobs in the public sector as part of his austerity drive. Let's start in the Middle East. The militant group Hezbollah has announced that eight of its members have died from the fighting with Israel. The group said it had fired a barrage of rockets into northern Israel in retaliation for deadly strikes on southern Lebanon. Meanwhile, Israel continues attacks on Rafah after the UN Security Council demanded a ceasefire. Sam Mednick with the Associated Press reports from Jerusalem.
Israel's military said there were at least 30 rockets fired from Lebanon into Israel on Wednesday. They killed at least one person and injured two in the city of Kiryat Shmona. Hezbollah claimed responsibility for the attack and said that it was in retaliation for Israel's overnight strike into southern Lebanon. This was one of the deadliest attacks since the beginning of the war. There have been daily exchanges between Lebanon and Israel since October when the war began, and the international community has been scrambling to contain the situation and make sure that it doesn't escalate. At least 11 soldiers and 9 civilians on Israel's side have been killed, and 200 Hezbollah fighters and 40 civilians on the Lebanese side. Now, while this was one of the deadliest attacks, I spoke to International Crisis Group analyst David Wood on Wednesday, and he said that it is unlikely to escalate further, that Hezbollah has had opportunity before to intensify the situation, and they haven't, and that they fired these rockets into an area where they knew that Israeli civilians had already evacuated. Also on Wednesday, there was continued attacks in Gaza. Airstrikes killed at least 4 people in the southern city of Rafah, and they're believed to be about 10 people still buried beneath the rubble. As these attacks are continuing, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has remained defiant, and he had a message for Hamas on Wednesday. He said that no amount of international pressure could prompt Israel from stopping this war until Hamas made concessions. His remarks were largely seen as a way to try and smooth over the situation between Israel and the United States. Netanyahu was angry at the U.S. for not vetoing a United Nations security resolution for a ceasefire. But still on Wednesday, Netanyahu criticized the U.S. and said that its lack of veto had encouraged Hamas to think that international pressure could make Israel stop the war before it completed its war aims. Relationships between the U.S. and Israel have become frosty in recent weeks, and largely because of Netanyahu's adamance to launch this ground offensive into the southern city of Rafah, where he says that the last Hamas groups are still operating. Netanyahu undermined the U.S. concerns on Wednesday, saying that the nearly 1.5 million people there could just move. He said they could pick up their tents and just go north. But it's unclear where they're supposed to go. Much of Gaza has been reduced to rubble, and the humanitarian situation has become catastrophic. I spoke to a nurse with the International Committee of the Red Cross. He's operating in one of the hospitals in Gaza. He said the hospitals are overflowing with patients as well as displaced people. There's not enough food. There's not enough water. The little water that there is, 90% of it is unusable, and there is a big concern for the outbreak of disease such as scabies and cholera.
That was Sam Mednick in Jerusalem. Despite the UN ceasefire resolution, the humanitarian situation in Gaza continues to deteriorate. United Nations Children's Fund spokesperson James Elder returned to Gaza last week, and now he says he witnessed starvation and growing helplessness among Palestinian children. He believes things will continue to get worse without the implementation of the UN Security Council's resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire.
Somehow, things get worse day in, day out for people. Obviously, their coping capacity has been smashed. There was such great hope with this announcement of a ceasefire on Monday, such great hope, but that hope is being drowned out by the bombs. I mean, I was in a hospital today, many children with those horrendous wounds of war again, still, and they're from injuries in the last 36 hours. I've been to the north where famine is imminent, and you can see that. You see that in people doing that universal symbol of hand to mouth showing their hunger, paper thin babies. So whether it's the bombardments that we hear now in the sky or whether it's just the complete deprivation and forced, you know, catastrophic hunger here, things continue to get worse, as they will, without the implementation of a ceasefire.
That was James Elder on the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Turning to the Americas, in the United States, divers have recovered the bodies of two construction workers in Baltimore Harbor. They were among eight people who fell into the water after a cargo ship crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge and caused it to collapse on Tuesday. Two people were rescued following the incident, and the divers are still searching for four others who are presumed dead. Meantime, investigators have secured the ship's data recorder. Ellen Fecklaw walks us through the latest development.
We've had more details overnight of not just the investigation, but indeed details of the final moments before the Dali struck the bridge, just seconds between the Mayday alert being raised and officials here on the bridge managing to close it to traffic and stop this catastrophe escalating even further. We've also had more details as well from safety officials about their investigation. They've confirmed federal transport officials, safety transport officials, that they have been able to board the Dali and retrieve the crucial voyage recording equipment that's likely to inform them of those last moments of that ship as it collided with the bridge. There are also reports as well that the propulsion system on that ship failed. We know from that video we've seen that the lights went out on the ship. But obviously those investigators want to know more details. They also want to hone in on what appears to be a troubled safety history for this ship, with reports, for example, in 2016 that it collided as it left the port of Antwerp. There are also other reports about safety problems that were documented and are available on publicly available databases. Understandably, perhaps safety officials here don't want to comment too much on those details, but they clearly are investigating the history of this vessel.
We are going to be working with NTSB as they lead their independent investigation. It's too early to speculate, of course, what NTSB will find, but if they discover or determine anything that should be considered in the regulation, inspection, design, or funding of bridges in the future, we will be ready to apply those findings.
There's clearly a wider issue here with reports about the bridge and just how much protection it had for a collision for a cargo boat of this size. There's been some conjecture about that. What is clear, though, is that bridges like this one, built some 50 years ago, were never designed for the advent of globalization and interdependent trade with ever bigger cargo ships carrying sometimes thousands and thousands of containers as they crisscross the world. And that's something that the US federal government is going to have a look at as it looks at the infrastructure around the United States and needs to consider just how much it can keep up with the ever-growing demand for globalized products and the way that they're transported across the world.
At 7 Fairclough in Baltimore. Meantime, local companies in the port of Baltimore say they are concerned about workers who load and unload cargo vessels following Tuesday's collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Workers say the incident was unimaginable, describing it as everybody's worst nightmare in Baltimore. Authorities say the port directly generates over 15,000 jobs. Economists and logistics experts believe the bridge collapse is causing some logistics headaches, but is unlikely to trigger a major new supply chain crisis. In South America, Argentine President Javier Milei has promised to fire government employees as part of his austerity drive. On Wednesday, the government said 15,000 jobs will be cut by the end of the month. Employees have taken to the streets in protest of the government decision. These layoffs come in the context of a growing recession in the country. The Argentinian economy plunged 4.3% in January, falling for a third consecutive month. Some observers say the job cuts will lead to more social tension. Joe Richards reports from Buenos Aires.
Employees here at Argentina's Innovation and Technology Development Agency do not know if they'll still have a job by the end of the day. 25-year-old Catalina Seinhardt says people are anxious and worried not only about their job security, but also over funding for the science community. Some have described what Argentinian President Javier Milei is doing as a chainsaw approach to fixing the country's economy. The government continues to implement spending cuts as it works towards its target of balancing the budget. This week, President Javier Milei announced a wave of layoffs in the public sector. On Tuesday night, the Libertarian president confirmed his austerity push will continue.
We fired 50,000 public employees. Not only that, but contracts were also cancelled, and 70,000 contracts are now going to end as well.
On Wednesday, the government said 15,000 jobs will be cut by the end of this month, but Milei said many more will come. These layoffs come in the context of a growing recession. The latest official figures show January was the third month in a row that Argentina's economy has fallen. As public sector workers in Argentina are on edge, unions have announced further strike action in early April.
That was Gerald Richards on the Argentinian economy. Finally, in Asia, this year's Boao Forum for Asia is ongoing on the tropical island of Hainan in southern China. Top legislator Zhao Luji delivered a keynote speech at the opening ceremony in which he made a case for foreign enterprises to continue to invest in China as the business environment improves, while pledging to provide a stronger impetus to regional and global development. The chairman of the National People's Congress Standing Committee also urged the international community to uphold multilateralism. Gao An has more from the scene.
During the opening plenary, China's top legislator Zhao Leji stressed that Asia is one of the most dynamic and also potential regions in the world, as it has made a great contribution to global growth. He also said that China has been promoting green development and also calls for collaboration with other countries in many aspects, such as tech innovation. He also said China has been welcome investment. And for more on that, take a listen.
We will proactively align with high-standard international economic and trade rules and foster a pro-business environment that is market-oriented, law-based, and world-class. We will further shorten the negative list for foreign investment, remove all restrictions on foreign investment access in the manufacturing sector, deliver national treatment for foreign businesses, and make it easier for foreign nationals to work, study, and travel in China. Apart from being a main trading partner of more than 140 countries and territories, China is a primary source of investment for more and more countries, and one of the most important investment destinations for most countries in the world. In the next 5 years, China's trading goods is expected to exceed $32 trillion, and the potential of its supersized market with over 1.4 billion people will be further unlocked. Investing in China is investing in the future.
There will be also a lot of panel discussions going on covering a broad variety of topics ranging from global security initiative and real economy and also digital economy. And now as many institutions are predicting that Asia will continue to be the engine of the global economy in 2024, there will be also a panel discussion on building Asia into a growth center.
That was Gao An on the opening ceremony of the Boao Forum for Asia's annual conference. Now, recapping today's headlines, despite the UN ceasefire resolution, humanitarian situation in Gaza continues to deteriorate as violence escalates. Two bodies are being recovered from the site of the bridge collapse in Baltimore as local businesses voice concerns over the economic impact. And Argentinian President Javier Milei has promised to cut tens of thousands of jobs in the public sector as part of his austerity drive. And that's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We would welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Qi Zhi. Thank you for listening.